Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tomoko Kato, the chef and owner of Patisserie Tomoko, a charming sweet shop in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. There she makes beautiful, delicious Japanese-flavored Western-style sweets. And if you have been to Japan, you must be really surprised to find truly high-quality Western-style sweet shops all over the country. Today, Tomoko will talk about how she built a successful patisserie in New York, and how Western-style Japanese sweets became popular in Japan, and her fresh Japanese mochi sweets that she makes at Patisserie Tomoko, and much more. So, hello, Tomoko. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you are from Hokkaido, the northern island of Japan, and when and how did you get into pastry?
Well, when I was little, my mother made pastry at home, and I liked the smell and the idea of making something with my hands. So I decided to go to a pastry school when I was around, 13 years old.
Wow, that's very early. Right. But because you grew up in Japan, you didn't think of studying traditional Japanese sweets called wagashi?
Well, you know, when I was 13, I didn't know anything about it. It's just I know the idea of something sweet. You know, as you're Japanese in Japan, you don't eat Japanese sweet much.
Right, especially when you're young.
Yeah,
right.
Probably shortcake and cheesecake, something like that.
Right, so, yeah, I agree. I cannot agree more. Mm. Yeah, I only recently started to eat Japanese wagashi, so... Yeah. Okay, so where did you work? Where did you study to become a pastry?
It's in Kyoto. I wanted to live in Kansai area when I was in high school. And so I looked for a pastry school in Kansai area. But most popular school I wanted to go attend was full and closed for applications. So I searched more. Then the school I found in Kyoto was the only choice that I had, so I applied.
Mm, okay. Well, Kyoto is not a bad place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was first or second time that I've been, so it's very new to me.
Mm, interesting. So so then you graduated, and where did you work?
After graduate the school, I found a job in Kyoto, and I worked at the shop for 3 years. It was very small, and we facing each other every day, all day.
Mm, okay. So was it a traditional style?
No, it's a Western style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a family business, so chef's fathers and mothers sell the pastry out there, and
wow.
Something like that.
Right. Mom and pop.
Exactly.
Right. You're maybe a daughter or something. Well,
I mean, there's so many daughters in the town.
Okay. Right. Okay. And why did you come to New York?
1999.
Okay.
It's just when I in the shop, I took a day off. Well, you know, we couldn't get much, summer vacation or winter vacation. It's we need to put them together.
Mm.
So once, twice a week, those put them together and then make a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So this time I go outside of Japan, so then I felt in New York, oh, I wanted to live someday, so I came.
Right, like most of us, just addicted to New York City and energy.
I guess so, yeah.
Right, okay. And so I heard that you went to a culinary school again here in New York, so why is that?
Well, I planned to be in New York City for a couple of years. So I went to language school, and I was get bored of going to language school, and I always brought pastry to my class. And one day my teacher say, your pastry are so good. Why don't you become the pastry chef? I was like, well, I was. But it's like my limited of an English skills. Like I was like, yeah, try to explain, but it's just a hard. I mean, like kind of like, okay, yeah. And but I thought it'd be a great idea to go to pastry school rather than going to language school. So I went.
Right. So basically, you learn English and also kind of a different style of pastry here in New York?
Absolutely. It's very new. But I think basic skill is the same.
But maybe I'd imagine it's more creative versus, you know, I think Japanese pastries tend to be more kind of classic, authentic French or German kind of.
Yeah. Like I know how to make like mousse cakes and like tart, stuff like that, but I never made cupcake.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, all right. And then I heard you had an internship at the Russian Tea Room. And after graduation, you worked at the Boulay Bakery and Lou Bernardin. So how did you get those jobs at some of the greatest restaurants in New York City? And you must be really good to get the jobs.
Well, I guess I was good at making pastries. Since I have been a pastry cook in Japan, I know how to make a pastries. So my culinary school teacher was like, you are bored at school, aren't you? Don't you want to go for internship earlier? Like internship after graduation, but she sent me out. So you know, then I can be able to see outside. So she introduced me to the chef at Russian Tea Room, working as an intern for 8 months. That was my first experiment outside school in this country, and I was very excited, and I wanted to see more. And like so many chances that I could get, so I could. I just go like participate as a helper, like a charity event. I went to help and I met very talented chefs and people. They're like, oh, come to see me at work. And so I visit them.
Right.
I was good at making pastries and I was first runner. The chefs all trust me and let me do like, you know, my stuff and like just something new and yeah. It's not my own way, but I just it's kind of like space gave to me.
So what did you learn at places like Boulay Bakery and Lou Bernardin?
Well, Boulay Bakery, I met chef Bill Yoses. He's such a kind person. He's very open. Like the skills and like preparation is, I don't remember what I run actually, but I like how I work at the like pastry kitchen in this country. And also like how to create and like how to like negotiate almost like those are like little things, but he's very open, so like he helped me a lot.
Okay, so eventually he went to the White House as an executive pastry chef.
It's like that surprised me a lot.
Really? Wow. Okay. And Lou Bernardin, that's another
Yeah, as one of the charity event, I met this person and like one day internship and then a few weeks internship, like then I went to the Medadan, like I was introduced, so I went and Florian, the time the chef, he's very kind again, and I was there for only 3 months, but it was very exciting moment in the career.
Right, that was the chef Michael Lasconius
before.
Okay, before him. Okay, but anyways, so congratulations. That was amazing.
I didn't know how great they are, so it's just like I'm very new to New York City, so it's like whatever the chance I get, I just accept it.
You didn't know how big it was.
No.
Okay. And after working at those Western restaurants, you moved on to Japanese restaurants in New York, such as Lan and Sakagura. So why did you become more into Japanese flavors?
Oh, no. It's just like after I worked under several chefs, I wanted to do my own. And also, I needed to make a living. You know, and so I got a job at a nine cook at Nan, not a pastry chef.
Mm-hmm.
And the restaurant was driven, and they asked me what's my specialty. So I respond pastries.
Mm. So you're talking about the Lan restaurant?
Yes.
Okay, that was under Mr. Akiyama.
Yes.
Right. Is it now the Sakamai?
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. So, but that was your first time to cook non-pastry dishes.
I mean, yes. And, you know, like, I love making pastry, but it's not just like, it's got to be a pastry. So I kind of open, whatever that be, I'll just try.
Right. So, but I'm sure it's a different flavor profile, but the same kind of the kitchen works.
It was a teamwork, and almost like my station was individual, but it's totally different.
Mm, okay, so then I think eventually you went to Sakagura as a pastry chef, right?
Yes. After like 2 years, I guess, working at Run, I got an offer to work at Sakagura, and I thought it's time to move on.
Mm. So actually, when you were at the Sakagura restaurant, someone told me that there's a new, incredibly talented pastry chef, so I should go there, even just for dessert.
Oh, yeah?
And actually, I went, and then you had a day off, so eventually, I didn't get to meet you. But anyway, so in 2004, you became the executive chef and pastry chef at the Cha'an in East Village, which is a unique Japanese-inspired tea house, and it was founded by the Japanese food cultural legend, Bon Yagi, who came to our show on episode 14. So how did you end up cooking both savory and sweet? You wanted to keep cooking sweets, right?
Oh, it's not quite just like, it's not like that. It's like, it's more like, Yagi-san, the owner, he was like, oh, you have a background in cooking, which is like, it was just coincident. I was catering food sometime back then. It was totally a coincident. Met a guy who was looking for a chef for his event, and he asked me, what do you do? And I said, I'm a pastry chef. He went like, can you work for me at my party as a cook? I was like, okay. And I worked on one of his parties, and he liked my work. So I worked for him once or twice a year for his private party, which is like for like charity event, like very wealthy families private event.
Right.
I didn't know how wealthy they were, but and then Yagi-san, I told Yagi-san about it, and he was like, you can do it.
Right, and I know that Mr. Yagi is very active in charities, mm-hmm. charitable contributions, so I'm sure there are really amazing parties you took care of. Right. Okay, so how challenged was it to, you know, cook both savory and pastry? Because you are really the chef, right, taking care of both.
Yeah, my cooking was a little different from the traditional Japanese cuisine. I did not have any experience working at a Japanese restaurant as a cook. Well, like the position that run is mm-hmm. Like very simple, like cook line. So, mm-hmm. so mostly I got idea from books and something I had eaten somewhere, and when I took it, it's so a lot of menu items I made at. Another had a long name because it was variation from different item. Mm. My staff had hard time to explain to customer.
Mm. Okay, and I heard you cooked something like, you know, the some toast, Japanese classic Japanese toast.
Oh yeah, that's like the bread. It's like I asked the owner Yagi-san, like, where should we get bread from? He was like, can't you bake it? okay, then so literally like 95% of product at Chang'an we make from scratch.
Mm.
Like soy milk and bread and everything.
Mm. Right. I mean, for those of our listeners who doesn't know anything about like Japanese kind of toast, it's very kind of classic, right?
It is. It is.
So it's more fluffier, and it's like a cushy, fluffy, and mm-hmm. it's the texture is almost like a cotton.
Yeah, and someone told me that there's a great like raspberry butter on the toast or comes with the bread. So I went to see how they are. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. Then I start making the like strawberries and raspberry butter ourselves.
Wow. Mm. I hope you're gonna do it now. Do you do serve at the
Petit? No, like we try to do like a savory stuff, but it's small kitchen. So for now, we just do pastry, but not the toast stuff like okay. that. But we do make donuts.
Okay, so we're gonna go into the details later about what you serve. But well, I hope you're gonna Japanese style bread. It's something.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's really everybody should know about. All right. So, so what did you learn at Chang'an?
Teamwork. I think it's. I'm very like independent. Like I do sports, but like mostly like tennis, running, and some like very independent sports, mm. not the team sport.
Right.
So. To I did everything at Chang'an, like management and ordering, and then it's like organize menus and then making the menus and even I serve customers.
Mm.
And but to run a restaurant, you can do it yourself.
Right.
So sometimes you need to trust your staff and let them do it on their way.
Mm.
So then I can see how different, like, it's very surprised sometimes that people create their own. Mm. So, like, that's, I learned a lot from my staff.
Right. So it sounds like you created the basis for becoming
Yeah, it's
store.
Like I was a coach, and now the athlete, like, my teammate is, like, do what they want. Whatever they want, and then find a new way.
Mm, right. Okay. And then based on your learning, you opened a Patisserie Tomoko in Williamsburg in November 2013. So why did you decide to open your own place?
I guess it's just the time. Things are going well at Chang'an, and I was happy, but I started wondering how long I could keep doing this, the same thing. So I set a goal for myself and decided to open my own shop.
Right. And what was the most challenging in starting in your business, especially in New York City? Because they say that it's much easier to open a shop in Japan for getting permissions and finishing construction in time and many other things.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was lucky in the case. My construction team was like on time. And it took only 4 months, a little less than 4 months, so which was incredible.
Right.
And when I opened it, just pricing was the hardest, since almost everything at the shop is made from scratch. And it was difficult to assign a price to the final product or what we can need to do for that price.
Right. I think a while ago you told me that during the construction you decided to have an x-ray on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
And then you found something, right? Can you tell us about
that? Yeah, well, it was like, well, you know, x-ray, taking an x-ray, it cost me, what, like $1,500?
Mm-hmm.
But whether doing it or not, then, like, if open it, cut it, the pipe, then what, like, cost you like double, triple?
Right, because it was illegal to cut the pipe.
So, yeah, something like we never expect, but glad that we did.
Right, okay. And so why in Williamsburg did you open your place?
Because I already live in and I love the neighborhood.
Okay, and I think, you know, because Williamsburg, where I live too, it's kind of open-minded, younger generation, and maybe, you know, new concept. Maybe,
oh, yeah, accepted. And it's like surprisingly people are generous, and they are kind of open-minded, so like it's not easy, but it's kind of like we're willing to explain what we are doing, and then they accept it. That's very generous.
Right. Okay. So what is the concept of a patisserie tomoko?
Concept. To incorporate Japanese ingredients and seasonal foods to the pastry and dessert.
Right.
Without being limited by traditional style or method, and to bring to the customer what I felt was the best product.
Okay. So it's unique in a sense that it's very traditionally French, but then something surprising, the seasonal Japanese style flavors. Okay, and I think I was surprised when the first time we went to Patisserie Tomoko, it's like a dessert bar and there's a takeout section. So it's like two functions in one place.
Yeah, I wanted to do both. And well, now it's hard for me to do it, but, you know, it's fun. It's like there's two ways to express our, like, desire.
Right, and dealing with different kinds of customers. Right. Okay. Let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about Tomoko's sweet tasting menu. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Tomoko Kato, the chef and owner of Patisserie Tomoko, a charming sweet shop in Williamsburg, where she makes beautiful, delicious Japanese-flavored Western-style sweets. So, what kind of sweets do you offer at Patisserie Tomoko? Maybe you can give us some examples.
For takeout?
Let's do both.
Okay. For takeout, we do like a green tea cheesecake, dakwa. Dakwa is the almond cake with a meringue base, so very fluffy and airy. Comes with like ganache, green tea, sesame, and yuzu ganache.
Mm.
And well, there's a lot, like of course mochis and the donuts that we talked about earlier.
Right. So we mentioned the gabagashi, which is Japanese traditional sweets and made usually from natural plant-based ingredients. So that element you have, because you like matcha and then some other like sesame,
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, like the greens.
Yeah, right. Like we have a lot of green tea stuff. Like people love green tea and especially matcha.
Mm.
And it's like we do try to do other flavors, but green tea is the most popular all the time.
What do you think? Because it's bitter, the balancing with the sweetness. Mm-hmm.
And very addictive to it.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like a caffeine?
It's like a cafe, exactly. And now, like, it's a tea, like, drunk, what they call, like, the caffeine is in tea is not as like coffee, so like it's almost like burning the chest, but it's kind of nice. It's not like it's nothing like a coffee, I guess. That's one. And the flavor, very intense flavor, like green tea. And I don't drink matcha much, but I do want to have something in a pastry.
Right. It's almost like, you know, for two reasons. One is caffeine, coffee, caffeine, matcha caffeine. And the other thing is the bitterness, very intense.
Mm-hmm.
So you drink coffee with sweets, and then you have matcha in sweets. So
yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. And I think one of the sweets I had, it's the Saikyo Miso Sablé. You know, like a cookie you made. And yeah, it's Saikyo Miso. It's like a sweeter miso.
Mm-hmm.
And you incorporated it in the sablé. It's like a flaky cookie.
Yeah, saltiness and sweetness.
Mm.
Right now, we don't make that cookie, but we do make a cheese cookie and a rosemary and a little bit of a Saikyo Miso in it.
Mm.
Nobody noticed, but just a little touch, that's a change.
Right. Yeah, and the miso is a umami producer as well. So, yeah, there's no reason not to be good. Right. So, I don't know how, you know, at the beginning I told you that I told everybody, Japan is really not known, obviously, for Western-style sweets, but they are in everywhere in Japan. So, do you know why it became the Western style sweets became popular in Japan?
I am not qualified to talk about the history or like anything, but I believe that the Japanese love variety and have always produced new and different variety of sweets. So I think that is why we see so many unique sweets and sweet that improvement or variation of a traditional Western sweets.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, because I think the Japanese sweets originally started to develop along with the tea ceremony, by the bitter, like we talked about matcha. And then I think in 16th century, the Spanish Catholic priest called Francisco Javier came to Japan, and then there was the beginning of a whole Western thing started to come in, right? They're putting the Castilla, the spongy cake. So I think that was the beginning of the Western thing. But like when you grew up, you were into Western culture, the Western sweets.
Yeah, right away. Not like mochi, neither like red bean paste.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, like as I grow up, yeah, I understand the concept, and I understood that the balance in the wagashi, the Japanese style. But when I was little,
right. And if you go to Japan and then travel, visit all those traditional wagashi shops, they make behind the store and just very beautifully.
Yeah, they are like amazing. Like if you go to a department store, you could see them and like how fast they can make.
Mm, right. And it's not something that my mother used to make, right? Western sweets tend to be more kind of available. Mm-hmm. You open a book and then they whip up and they make bigger cake, that kind of thing. But I think perceptionally, Japanese wagashi tend to be very challenging.
Yeah, it's absolutely. There's a lot of process. So if you want to make from scratch, yes.
Right. Right. So, okay. So let's see. I have so many questions today for you. Right. So what do you think is really unique about your place, Patisserie Tomoko, is your dessert tasting menu. So could you tell us about it and, you know, what kind of concept it is and the price, how it works?
So we have a tasting course, which is beside the takeout menu. And one is a $12 standard course and the other one is $16 premium. Mm. And both courses offer choice of a main dessert. Right now we have, all the time we have a black sesame crumble with sake ice cream. And we just add the pumpkin cheesecake with rum raisin with coffee chocolate sauce. And the ricotta cheesecake we've been doing for like summertime, we might change soon, which we make a ricotta cheese ourselves and then make a ricotta cheese mousse, which is like it's very airy and light. It just like can't stop making it.
Starving. Right. So the idea of serving sweets in the course menu, what is the idea?
Well, try to do like a seasonal like stuff, but as you go to a farmer's market or even a supermarket, it's changed. Even now that in the peaches are in a season, but sometimes it's gone. Like they are not, well, it depends on that the weather and that. So we try to do like put that seasonal fruits and ingredients on the menu, but it's sometimes it's like, for instance, like apple, not in the season right now, but sometimes we could get great apples. Mm-hmm. So it depends on that what we can get. So the concept of the menu is like, I think the time that what we think is the best.
Mm, right. So you are the one who can capture the moment of the peak time of the fruits, because it's really hard.
It is very hard. And now, like a candy fruit, like right now we have a kumquat candy, which is not in the season, but we made in April, and in the jar, so we keep it. Mm. And then now, right now we have a lemon tart. Comes with that yogurt sorbet.
Mm.
That comes with the kumquat candy.
Right. Wow, I appreciate that because, you know, like, for instance, apples. I saw in the farmer's market, I saw apples throughout the summer at some stands, and that was a little disappointing. But, you know, you have to know exactly this apple is a peak mm-hmm. and this apple is a peak, so you're doing the job for us. Right. And the other point of a course menu, I think plating, instead of take a, you know, just take a, you might just eat out of the box or the bag, but then you plate beautifully. So that's another reason that you started tasting menu?
Yeah, it's like a course menu is totally different. I mean, the dessert itself, it's takeout, it's, you can, it can be hold for like 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. But the dessert is totally different. It comes with ice creams and it can be warm or hot, like a souffle. Mm. So, like, different concept.
Right. So, it's the dining experience with yeah. desserts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you have only 8 seats. So.
Oh, actually, right now we have 12.
Oh, I'm increased. Sorry, I've been that way for a while. So, yeah, the... So that you have 2 dishes, like, and 3 dishes, you said. And also, I heard you kind of really customize, depending on, say, one customer is drinking coffee or drinking wine, you change the menu slightly, depending on the customer.
Oh, you mean like a pairing?
Or? Right.
Oh, the pairing, yeah, well, coffee and tea. Oh, so can I talk about tea pairing?
Sure.
Actually, we're going to have a tea pairing with a tea dealer tomorrow, September 22nd. His tea is amazing. Like, he always finds tea from all over the Asia. And so we start doing a tea dessert course menu once a month or once every other month. So that's happening tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to do, like, his matcha is I never taste like that.
Mm.
So we're going to make apple ice cream matcha affogato.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Right. So the speaking of pairings, yeah, I was going to ask also about, because you offer, with the course menu, you offer sake or wine pairings, mm-hmm. and now on top you have tea pairings.
Yes.
Right. So how popular is that? People pair dessert with sake or wine with alcohol?
Well, if they want to do with alcohol, yes. There's more wine, not sake. We mm. don't serve sake itself. We do make a sake cocktail.
Oh, okay. Right. So because it's easier to pair with some sweets?
Yes, and that's in, like, it's matcha, so...
Mm, oh, okay. Right, so it balances out. Okay. And so I heard that you buy the place for tasting menu in Japan and take them home in your suitcase.
Yes.
So what is the point of using Japanese tableware for you?
I couldn't stop myself when I first saw them. I've been looking for plates and cups. Well, cups, I couldn't do it because it's so fragile. But that one is like... can think of a different combination. The color is just right, and hame style is just right.
Mm.
Just, it's both charming and festival at the same time.
Mm, right. So it's the serving tasting menu for you is another chef's mindset.
Yeah,
right.
It's like a lot of people ask us, like, where did you get it?
Mm.
Like, yeah, we have not just the plates and the cups and... Like, we care about details, so when we find something interesting or wanted to use a mm-hmm. shop, even a very fragile, we do hand washing, so.
Mm. Right. So I thought of, you know, like if you go to Kaiseki restaurant, they have seasonally, you know, changed plates, cups and bowls and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that reminded me of your style of, you know, the plating.
Yeah, I always tell my staff, don't make me cry.
Be careful. Right. Okay. And so you have a very open kitchen.
Yes.
You know, like really like open, mm-hmm. and you can see exactly. I can see what you're working on, mm-hmm. how precisely you just use, you know, move your hands. So, what is the purpose of being so open?
I just didn't want to make a like table, so I made it a counter. This style was only that. The customer can see how we make the dessert and entertained by the process. And at the same time, we can immediately serve that what we made to the customers.
Right. So. This is very time-sensitive ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. But do you communicate with your customers?
A lot. Like, that's the most, like, inspirement moment that I could get. Like, a lot of people, like, try to share with us their like opinion and even the recipe.
We tried
a few times and now it was on the menu.
Wow, interesting. By the way, who's your customer?
I don't know what he does and I don't know what they do, but we don't ask, but it's just like that excitement that they had in the past and that they shared, so we just listen. And now in our head, we can do this and that. It doesn't need to have that exact recipe. It's just the idea.
Right. Okay. So in general, you have non-Japanese people, Japanese people mixed?
Yeah, very mixed. Like mostly, yeah, I can't say how much like, percentage, but yes.
Right. Okay, great. And you were featured in a big article about mochi in the dining section of the New York Times recently. So the article says, fresh homemade mochi is harder to find, but Tomoko Kato cooks a batch 3 times a week at Patisserie Tomoko. So what is special about mochi, and what kind of mochi sweets do you make?
Oh, the mochi, the consistency is very unique, and we add the flavors such as green tea, sesame, and chocolate has made it into a new and very attractive sweet, I guess.
Okay, because mochi is sticky, but at the same time, unless it's really delicate, it's just a gooey, you know, sticky animal to me. So
yeah, and even like we've been doing this for over 3 years. I've been doing it over like 15 years making a mochi, and each time it's different.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So like I don't say I'm the best, but some other stuff is she makes incredible textures and consistency. So like I always watch how she does.
Wow. So the New York Times article was how to make mochi, and there's a little recipe. So maybe you can give us a quick version of how to make good mochi.
For that, you have to come to the shop and see us.
Okay. That's a perfect answer. Yeah, that was Azuki Beans recipe in New York Times, right? So you... do you make it like 3 times a week? Like
Since the article, more than that.
Wow, yes. Really? Wow, congratulations. That was a big article.
Yes, it was. We are so excited.
Mm-hmm. That was in June, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the front page and the whole back page, one page.
Here. Yes, yes.
So, okay. And what is your plan for the future?
Just keep doing what we do. And with like creating more than interesting and unique sweets that what we are taste.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can't wait to come and see you. First time in a while, so.
Oh, yes.
Right. So what do you recommend for now to eat right this moment?
To take away or for the dessert?
I want to sit down and have course
okay.
menu.
Okay. Well, right now we excited about the pumpkin cheesecake, but we're going to add that chestnut cake, which is Mont Blanc, with yuzu ice cream.
Wow.
Yeah, people love it. And then we put the pistachio ganache in the center, like very well composed.
Right. So pumpkin and chestnut is cannot be more fall than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so thank you for joining us today, Tomoko.
Thank you for having me.
So if you'd like to know more about Tomoko's work, please visit patisserietomoko.com. That is patisserie. Tomoko, Tomoko is T-O-M-O-K-O, one word, .com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We will really appreciate your feedback. And today's show was made possible by Corin, and our engineer is David Tatasayore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.